Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. This show is for the week of March 18th, 2024. The global carbon dioxide level is 423.96 parts per million. That's essentially 424 parts per million of carbon dioxide pollution in the air, when scientists tell us that we need to be at 350. So we're way overshot the mark already. And it turns out there's only 2,115 days left until the year 2030, by which we have to cut our carbon dioxide emissions by 50%. So the clock keeps ticking. We've got work to do. Well, it turns out that here in Massachusetts, the carbon emission that we are trying to reduce, there's some big chunks you can think of, how to break it out. There's residences, where people live produces a lot of carbon dioxide. But in Massachusetts, because we're not particularly agricultural or industrial, another big chunk of our carbon dioxide emissions come from transportation. It is cars, people, essentially cars getting around, right? There's a lot of carbon pollution that comes from that. Of course, once you say you want to reduce carbon pollution from transportation, you immediately start to think about electric vehicles and how wonderful they're going to be. We're all going to have an EV. Or you think about mass transit and how the MBTA needs to be electrified, so all those trains run on electricity. But it's an interesting idea that the mundane, somewhat ignored, but very elegant bicycle is also a great solution to climate issues in reducing carbon dioxide emissions, in addition to giving transportation options to many, many, many more people. I recently had the good fortune of reading a book called Two Wheels Good, which extols the virtues of the bicycle as among the most efficient ways that human beings can travel. And if you look at it, a bicycle is a marvel of technical development over the last couple hundred years. Really very interesting story. And in fact, that technical development's continued because nowadays we have what are called electrical bicycles, electric bikes or e-bikes, where there is an electric motor to assist you as you pedal your bicycle. It's a wonderful thing. Anyway, so we're talking about transportation and we bring in the idea that maybe an electric bike has a role to play in cutting our carbon pollution. But at the same time, we have a lot of people who are stranded and don't have any option for getting any easy option for getting to work. People who live in cities oftentimes depend on buses, which are, of course, polluting. And the buses are unreliable. There's a great overlap in the need for cheap, reliable transportation and carbon reductions. So there's this Venn diagram going on with lots of issues that come together. So it's an interesting topic. Anyway, that's a long way of coming around to an idea that electric bikes have a role to play. And it turns out that in the city of Worcester, Massachusetts, there is currently ongoing a program, essentially a pilot program, to try and introduce electrical bicycles as a common means of transportation. And we are blessed to be able to talk to the Worcester program manager from an organization called Mass Bike, who is working hard at this intersection between justice, equity, carbon pollution, transportation. Her name is Alex Salcedo. And Alex, welcome to the Climate Minute. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Ted. Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I gave a sort of a long roundabout description of what I think we want to talk about today. Did I get that right? Do you agree that there's overlaps here and that bicycles have a role to play in our future?
Absolutely. I think bicycles are one of those things that tend to unite us. Years ago, I was truly convinced that there were two topics and only two that would help us unite us, which was food and music. And since I joined Mass Bike, I am discovering that there's a third one, which is bikes. Not that it has anything to do with what I do for a living now, but it's reality. I've confirmed in actually almost 2 years. I've been with MassBike since the end of March of 2022. Mm-hmm. And I cannot begin to tell you how much, how many experiences I have collected and how much I've learned in these 2 years that confirm that a bicycle is not just transportation, another way of going from point A to point B, but also one of the best ways to build community. It's really an instrument of social change.
Really?
And I don't want to get ahead of myself, but definitely, if you ask me, I would tell you that I think bikes are kind of like the best way to unite our communities and the United States of America and the whole world, really.
That is an interesting perspective. When you say unite communities, I imagine you're thinking like, I enjoy riding my bike. It's not an e-bike. I like to zoom around. And I think that part of the joy of biking, so now this is like we're already pretty far away from the bike program, but just the joy of biking, it brings you back to being 6 years old and the first time you get on that bike and you can fly and you're free and it's liberating and people love it. I mean, is that, and at the same time, I mean, you see, you know, groups of people riding their bikes together, right? I mean, can you say, describe the sort of social bonding that happens with bicycles?
Yeah. So one of the things, and I'm going to test it with you, is that I'm just going to ask you if you remember the color of your first bike.
Yeah, it was a blue bike, a used blue bike that my father got from a friend somehow. I don't know. I was maybe 6 or 7 and it arrived at the front door. I walked up and in retrospect, it was kind of a junky bike, but it was my bike and I loved it. And I remember the day that the person standing there dropping it off, my father, me, and this bike in front of me. And that was wonderful.
Yeah. So I said that I was going to test you because generally when I ask that question, people who I know for a long time or people who I'm just meeting, they generally get kind of like their eyes get kind of like, wow, you know, traveling memory lane so fast. And there's a joy. There's a joy that they remember. So I think one of the things that is incredible about a bike is that, first of all, is it brings us back to our childhood. Second of all, reminds us of our parents, our family. And the third one is that is the first means of transportation, the first kind of like way of going to, you know, to the library, to the store, and that we feel, wow, this was my first vehicle. Like, we never forget the color of our first car. But if we go back a little more, we never forget the color of our first bike. And for sure, I don't know how many times I've asked this question and in so many different settings and different languages as well. But people never forget the color of their first bike. And so that's what I'm trying to say, that it builds communities, because I feel that the best way to connect with people is to go back, to make them remember what they were doing as a child, what impacted them as a child. And we all had, you know, our childhood. So I think this opens the door to other conversations. I happened to read something, or I heard it recently, that when you ask people something about their childhood, they feel very relaxed and they open up easily. So this is the first time that you and I are having this conversation, but I think if you test it with somebody else, you'll see that what I say, you can prove me wrong or not, but it generally, it happens that way. So that's what I mean. You know,
it
opens up so many conversations from people from all walks of life. And it's because of the bike. It's the excuse of, you know, right, the bike.
Right. It is. That's a remarkable insight. It's just that I think the bike is, it's unifying, it's liberating it. And it's a favorite of sort of sustainable people because it's also like technically, energetically, extremely efficient, right? To move a human body at the speed of a bicycle and go 20 miles in an hour is just remarkable. And which is why, as we build the new future, it seems like the bicycles have a role to play somewhere, right? Somewhere. So tell me, you with Mass Bike in collaboration with the Clean Energy Center here in Massachusetts, you are managing a program in the Worcester area that I think brings some of this stuff together. Can you describe this is a program that relates to electric bicycles and transportation usage in Worcester. Tell me the story about that program.
Yeah, so Mass Bike was initially awarded grant funding through the Massachusetts Clean Energy Center, MassCEC, you just mentioned it, under the new Accelerating Clean Transportation for All, which is called Act for All program, to conduct a two-year program to distribute approximately 100 electric bikes and track their usage amongst selected populations in the city of Worcester. So with 9 other partners, which included the Chamber of Commerce, community-based organizations, the Central Massachusetts Regional Planning Commission, we deployed in the summer of 2022 e-bikes to low-income residents throughout Worcester. So we did that between 22 and 23. In mid-2023, the Massachusetts Clean Energy Center let us know that there was going to be more funding available if we were interested. And we obviously decided, because of the success that we had with the first phase, that we were going to apply for the second phase, more funds. And we were lucky enough to get more funds for another 100 plus bicycles. This time, what we decided is that we were going to include other communities, and it was going to be income eligible. When we did the first phase, it was for applicants who were 40% below, 40% max on the state median income. Mm-hmm. So for this second phase, we are incorporating neighboring communities and Westboro, neighboring communities of Worcester and Westboro. And we're going to go from 40 to 80% of the SMI.
Just what you mean, if your income, your household income is up to 80% of the average income in Massachusetts, you're eligible for what, a rebate on an electric bicycle or
correct? Yes. So the way we're doing it is that we're going to have a percentage of the bikes that are going to follow the model that we use in 2022. They're mm-hmm. going to be completely covered. That will be for people who are in the 40% SMI or below. Mm-hmm. And for the ones that are between 40.1% all the way to 80% SMI, they will be able to get access to these e-bikes through a voucher program. The voucher program could be up to $1,500 that will go towards the e-bike. Mm-hmm. And we'll also have a voucher that will go towards accessories, separate from the $1,500, and we'll also have another voucher that is for the maintenance of the bike for a year. Those are kind of like the if you ask me the differences between the first phase and the second phase. One of the things that we learned in the first phase is that there were a lot of people who apply for the program, but were not in the 40% below SMI. So we wanted to, and I know you have a question, we wanted to make it more inclusive. And that's why we introduced, okay, let's do a voucher program in which the ones that make a little more money will be able to have an assistance in the way of providing them voucher amount up to $1,500 plus what I just mentioned for accessories and the maintenance of the bike.
So I mean that seems like it makes the bike electric bikes very accessible. How did you expect people to use them? Was there a deal? We say you're going to ride to work on it, or you're going to take it out on Saturdays and go for a spin. I mean, what was the theory behind making the bikes available?
Yeah. So for the first phase of the program, what we did is that we gave participants who went through. Obviously, in the first phase, something that it's important is that we receive almost 1,200 applications, and we only had 100 bikes available.
Wow.
The funds allowed us to be able to distribute 100 bikes plus accessories. All the accessories that we gave with the bike were safe related: helmet, lock, a pump, gloves, lube. To lubricate the bike. So, you know, it was kind of like an introduction of the maintenance. And we also did an annual, we included the annual maintenance of the bike. So one of the things that we asked in return was that the participants that were selected were going to have to provide data for 18 months. So we gave them the bike, the accessories, and the maintenance. And in return, they will provide us with weekly data, which they did. And we use five different categories that will basically covered all the usage of the bike, which was work, school, shopping, recreation, and other. And in other, we obviously included everything, doctor's appointments, visiting friends, anything that was out of these other four categories. So that's what, and we collected that data and we made it public. Actually, I'll send you the link where you can see the data. From August of 2022, because August of 2022 was the first, was the month in which we distributed the first group of bikes. This was, you know, starting in August, September, October. People wonder why is it that it took us so long to deploy these e-bikes. One of the reasons why it took so long is because we never expected to get so many applications.
Right.
So we had to figure out ways in which the bikes were going to low-income participants, because everybody from all walks of life applied. And the other thing is that when we deployed the e-bikes, we did it at a bike shop. And obviously, it's a bike shop that runs a business. Mm-hmm. So we had to accommodate the distribution of these e-bikes to their schedule. And the other thing is that we deployed every single e-bike in a personalized way. Everybody got to understand what they were getting themselves into. They had to sign a liability waiver, which is very simple, and an e-bike pledge, which spelled out what they were getting themselves into. And we emailed this documentation to all of them in advance. So by the time they were at the bike shop to pick up their bikes, they knew what they were signing or what they were getting the commitment to do.
So I'm dying to find out how did they use it? What categories, if you give e-bikes to 100 people, do they use it for getting to work? Do they use it for recreation? I mean, what was the, was it, and I guess a follow on is the way they used it, is it what, that what you expected? Or was it different from what you expected?
Yeah. So to give you an idea, and I'll send you the link, the biggest percentage or the largest percentage what was used, and we're still collecting data because we're still running into the 18 months. What they used it, like the largest percentage was to work. Like 28% of the trips were to go to work. And then very close, I think it was 25% was for recreation. Mm-hmm. And shopping was a big one. What happened, and when you see the trend of the data, you'll see that at the beginning, it was heavily used for recreation. Then as time went on and they felt more comfortable, they started using it for work. And then for shopping purposes. The other thing that we did is that we provide them with accessories. Like when they just got their bikes, they were like, okay, what am I going to do with this bike? They didn't know much of the potential of the bike. And they were told, okay, if you need anything, we're going to have some funds available. And tell us what you would like to use the e-bike for. We're keeping in constant contact with them. Mm-hmm. And they started saying, you know what? I want to go to the store. What can I use in order to go to the store? So we provided them with racks, with a basket, with, if they were to doctor's appointments, let's say they needed a basket to carry their bottle of water, whatever it was. Right. So, that's how we started seeing that the trend was evolving in some categories and devolving in other categories. Mm-hmm. So it's fascinating to see because one of the things that makes us very happy and the potential confirms the potential of these e-bikes, especially in a city like Worcester with all the hills, is that they rode all year long. Obviously, the data went way down, and you'll see it in December 2022 into 2023. If you remember, I'm going to make you travel memory lane again. That's my hobby, by the way. I'm kidding. You will see that 2022, we had a long fall. It got cold, really cold. Basically in January, February, so no, October, November, December, people were still riding. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the trend shows that. This 2023 was completely different. It was a very hot and humid summer. And people, even in the summertime, couldn't ride much because it was extremely hot and extremely humid. But they started riding more in October and November when the weather got a little more comfortable. Fascinating. But starting January, you might remember that we had cold and snow right in January and February, and it got extremely, extremely unpleasant outside. We had snow and we had ice, and the bicycles are not equipped for snow and ice. And in fact, one of the most important things, and this brings me to what is it that MassBike does? MassBike is an advocacy organization that really works on safe cycling in Massachusetts. And we cannot stress the word safety enough. We never ask our riders to go out if the weather was bad. Knock on wood, we haven't had any fatalities. There were two people who had bad accidents. Actually, one of them had a very bad accident, but he recovered and he's back on the bike, actually. He loves it. And One of the things that we promote is that we want people to ride, but we want people to ride in a safe manner. And that is one of the things that we did when we deployed the bikes. We taught them about the bike. They got familiar with the bike and all the components of the bike, but they also got training in how to ride their bike. And they went for a test ride with the bike before they were able to leave the store with their bikes as the new owners of the bike.
So I have to admit, a long time ago, I went to college in Worcester, so I'm very familiar with steep hills and ice in Worcester. But some people were riding through the winter. So this raises a whole other set of questions. Wintertime riding, Worcester, I know, I mean, are there bike lanes in Worcester that allow people to get around safely? Or is that, how do you approach that discussion? I'm sure Mass Bike has opinions about bike lanes and things, right? But what's the take there on just the traffic in Worcester?
That's a great question. So we have a new Department of Transportation and Mobility. We now have a Department of Transportation and Mobility, and they are working to make the city safe. And obviously, we as an advocacy organization are providing data and the feedback from the, because it's not just the numbers or the number of trips, the number of miles, it's also the quality data that we know of, which is what is it that the e-bikers are experiencing and how are they feeling when they ride their bikes. I happen to ride one of the bikes, and I can tell you, Ted, that I feel very comfortable riding around Worcester, and people think I'm crazy. But one of the things that I say to people, and we obviously did this with all our participants, is that you need to communicate with your surroundings, and that includes drivers, because this is not a bike-friendly city. There aren't bike lanes. There are some bike lanes that are being obviously put around. But we still don't have that infrastructure. So we had these e-bikes on the road, and we knew that we needed to train people to ride in a way that they felt safe. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I say to people, if you're riding your bike, make sure that when you cross an intersection or when you are going to go on a crosswalk, get off the bike and cross as a pedestrian. Because, and make sure that they see you, that the driver, like, make eye contact with the driver, because you know what's happening nowadays. People are driving their cars, but they're also texting, mm-hmm. or they're on the phone, or they're eating, or we women are putting makeup on, the whole nine yards. So the moment we make sure that they see us, that makes a big difference. And be mindful of your surroundings. Like, don't take it for granted that they're going to stop, or that they're going to see you. And I've heard from participants that say that riders become kind of invisible in the winter time. Mm. And so this is when we have to be extra careful. Wear something that is bright. Have lights on your bike. Actually, that's one of the programs that Mass Bike does. We do something that is called Lights Brigade, where people can write to us. I want to distribute lights in my community. We send them the lights. We send them the kind of like the marketing material. So if they want to go to the corner of their home and start distributing lights, they can do so. Wow. So that's
I know. It's fascinating stuff. I mean, let's go back to the question. So, just to level up here, you've distributed now on an ongoing basis and are currently collecting data from people that essentially have newly acquired bikes and you see in the data that you're collecting, at least the hints that there's a learning curve that the riders have, that all of a sudden they learn, oh, I can drive to work. I can ride to work. I can ride to the store. I mean, that kind of data must be incredibly powerfully valuable for planning purposes and for how to further accelerate the use of bikes. I mean, it's almost like it's a great test case, right?
Correct. Yes. To give you an idea, we all love data, right? From August of 2022 all the way through December of 2023, there were 4,000 trips written. And that translated into, and I have it in front of me, into almost 60,000 miles written. And if we go a little more technical, that meant that the estimated emission savings, I'm sure you're going to like this, is so far we've had 32,719 pounds of estimated emission savings until December of 2023.
Fantastic.
So the main reason of the Massachusetts Clean Energy Center funding this program is because they wanted to make the case of the estimated emission savings. But in order to calculate estimated emission savings, we needed the trips, we needed the miles, we needed the number of e-bikers that were riding these trips and miles. Not everybody, the number is not the same every month. We ended up distributing in the first phase 98 bikes, but not everybody was riding every week or every month. It changed throughout, you know, the time. But what I can tell you is that this confirms the potential of bikes. We just talk about that bikes, obviously, one of the biggest CO2 emissions are cars, and we take care of that problem with an e-bike. But the other thing that I think is easier for everybody to understand is the health aspect and the economic aspect, because people who ride an e-bike are not going to be using their car much. And we have had participants who have come to us and said, you know what, I'm saving $200 a month because I don't have to take Uber. I don't have to ask right. for a ride. I don't have to be waiting for the bus and see if the bus comes. And you mentioned something that is very true about an e-bike, especially right now, which is the freedom and the saving of time when we don't rely on anybody from, you know, when we need to go to, you know, to a doctor's appointment, to work. So that is, I would say that bikes or e-bikes, especially in Worcester, are the great lever as well, because as we age, our ability to ride a bike diminishes. We get tired. Especially in Worcester with these hills. And this is when the assist, all the e-bikes that have been distributed in the program are class one, which is pedal assist. The other word for pedal assist, because there are e-bikes that you don't have to pedal. You just go and you don't have to make any effort. With these bikes, we purposely wanted to use class one because we also want participants to, if you want to say, like, get a skin in the game. They pedal, they make some effort, and then the motor kicks in and it gives you assist on a hill.
It makes it easier to go up the hill. I mean, the bike is almost is identical to a regular bike, except it's not so hard to go up a hill because you've got the electric bike assist.
Correct. Yeah, people think that an electric bike is kind of like a different. Some people picture, oh my God, I didn't know that an e-bike looked like a bike. And I say, yep, it's just a bike. It's just that it has a motor, and sometimes you don't even see the motor. They are getting so sophisticated that the weight is now basically very similar to a regular bike. And the motor is hidden in the frame of the bike, so you don't see this little motor that is helping you. So I happened to ride an e-bike, and sometimes people think, oh, that's an e-bike. And I say, yep, that's an e-bike. It's just that you don't see that the
e-part.
The e-part, yes. And I would say that in my particular case, I don't need a car. I barely use my car. I do everything. I do shopping. If I have to go to a meeting, I show up with, I ride my bike from my house to where the meeting is. And I cannot begin to tell you, some days I just invent. Where do I have to go today?
So I can go ride.
Yeah. And I was told, because obviously I'm riding one of the program e-bikes. And I was told at the beginning, it's so much fun that you're going to look for an excuse.
Right.
And sure enough, I heard the same thing from participants, that they just invent that they need to go and get milk, even though they have a brand new gallon in their refrigerator, because of the fun. Because that's the other thing. You are exercising and you don't even realize you are doing it.
Well, that raises two questions for me. One question is, on the e-bikes, so I've looked for e-bikes and I've looked for, you know, going to the shop and kind of kick the tires, so to speak. And I'm always looking for what is typically called a road bike, which is for long distance travel, not something that has baskets and things on it. Does your bike have a basket so you can go to the supermarket and buy some food and put it in a basket and carry it home?
Yeah. So what I discovered this, I did not know this. I discovered that panniers existed, saddlebags. And
that's a funny word. Let me just panniers for the uninitiated. Panniers is it the old fashioned saddlebags or two little baskets on the back of your bike kind of thing? That's what fancy French name for baskets on your bike, right?
Correct. Yeah, it's two bags that are hanging on the rack.
Mm-hmm.
And the good thing is that you just you can remove them. So I remove them from the rack, go into the store. I don't even have to use plastic bags anymore.
Really?
And when I'm checking out, I just, instead of using a bag, I just put everything in my panniers and go back, carry my panniers in the shopping cart all the way to where the bike is parked, put the panniers back in the bike. And my partner makes fun of me because sometimes I come home and I'm like a magician getting stuff and I don't see an end because I'm able to carry 40 pounds with no problem of stuff in my panniers, and I don't feel it because of the electric, because of the assist that the bike is giving me. So I don't know how much money I have saved, but I can tell you that we used to own two cars. And when one of the cars went, because it was a very old, it was a 1990 Toyota Tercel, that ran like a charm until it didn't. Actually the body of the car went before the engine motor went.
Yeah.
And a great car, but you know, we had to let it go. And we were thinking about getting another car. And then I started working for MassBike, got this e-bike, and now we don't need another car.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the best. I'm going to have to write a book about my adventures with an e-bike.
I think there's, believe me, I believe there's a need for that. One other question, though. Let me ask this, because you've talked about riding the bike yourself. What's the demographic of people that apply to get the bikes? I mean, I imagine it's every 25-year-old guy that wants to zoom around Worcester would apply for a bike. Do you see an age distribution of people that are older, younger, you know, mothers with kids what's the makeup of the people that get the bikes?
Yeah, that's a great question. For the first round, we had people from all walks of life. I think I mentioned this to you before, applied. And we wanted to mirror the demographics of the city of Worcester. And we did. We were very fortunate. We had 49%, it was white, 24% was Hispanic, Latino, 12% black, and I know that's this. I'm
You're familiar with the data.
With the data, yes, because, you know, I've been doing this for 2 years now. And 7% of the population was Asian, and the rest was mixed race, which is, if you go into the census data for the city of Worcester, you see that that's exactly what the demographics in Worcester was. I would say that this was the confirmation that bikes are not going to a specific demographic group. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that we had students, college, it was for the applicants or participants that were selected were 18 plus, and there was no limit. So we mm-hmm. had the youngest that was 18 and the oldest participant was 72. So, one of the things that is incredible is that most of the, by 1%, the largest population gender-wise was women. There were 49% women, 48 men. Self described was the rest, which is
right.
I think 3 or 4%. Yeah. So that's obviously makes me happy.
Amazing.
Because I'm a woman. That for 1%.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, wow. So there's a bunch of questions. I don't want to hold you up too long, and you know, I know you're a busy person. Can you tell me? So I know the program that's underway now has a deadline coming up. Right? That if people are listening to this show and would like to participate, they have to act before the end of the month, right?
Correct. Yes. So we are accepting applications. They can go to mustbike.org and they will see that that's the first thing that will come up about the e-bike program, the second phase. And we're going to accept applications until Sunday, March 31st. And again, we have surrounding communities that are included in this second phase. And we have Auburn, Millbury, Grafton, Shrewsbury, Boylston, West Boylston, Holden, Paxton, Leicester, Westboro, and Worcester. And if they have any questions, any additional questions, we're getting a lot of questions, and obviously we're responding them to the best of our ability. Is they can just send me an email. My email is very simple. Alex, A-L-E-X, at mustbike.org. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
That is, and I'll just repeat, because you can't repeat this stuff enough. It's MassBike, one word, MassBike.org, and you'll see the e-bike program, and you can. And so tell me, if someone is not in those communities, but is someone in Massachusetts, MassBike has programs all over the state, right? So even if you're not in Worcester applying for this, you should go check out the MassBike website because there's a bunch of cool stuff on it, right?
Yes. We would love to include everybody, but obviously there's a limitation in the number of bikes and the funds. We're hoping the idea of all this, everything that we're doing is to provide information to the state for a rebate program that they are working on that hopefully will benefit the whole state of Massachusetts. That's where the idea of this pilot program came from, to provide all this information back to the state, because obviously, they will be able to get what they need they release their rebate program. And if somebody's not in those communities, we cannot stress enough the importance of check us out. We do a lot of we do rides. As I said before, we have a Lights Brigade program. Lights or bike lights. Save lives. And if anybody wants to organize light distribution in their community, they're more than welcome to contact us. They don't have to pay anything. They will get a box of lights and they will be able to distribute lights in their communities. And obviously, if people want to support the work that MassBike does, we have a donate button as part of our website that people can use to support the work that MassBike does.
That's great. I looked and there is on June 9th, there is the Kitty Knox ride, which is around Boston, Cambridge, Watertown, and Waltham in honor of a biracial woman cyclist and barrier breaker in the 1890s. That's great stuff.
Correct.
That's wonderful.
And I'll give you one more history bit that I'm sure you're going to like. Thanks to bikes, in the late 1800s, women were able to vote. They weren't able to go, obviously, longer distances. And it also introduced the kind of like different way of dressing for women because they needed to get on the bike. And Kitty Knox is one of those pioneer women that do not get enough credit. And that's why that's the other thing that we do at MassBike. We want to make sure that people who are the silent heroes get the recognition that they deserve. So the other thing is that if anybody wants to promote activities, they can use our calendar. We have a MassBike friendly calendar all year long where people can post bike activities for free and get the word out. And that is obviously MassBike is the Massachusetts Bicycle Coalition. MassBike is a nonprofit 501c3 organization that is statewide. So we have the beauty of promoting activities throughout the states.
That is one of this. Alex, this has been a fascinating conversation. Really, really fun. We got to put it down. What we'll do is I will put up links. They'll go on the massclimateaction.org blog. I promise to get that up soon. But again, it's massbike.org. That's where you got to go to start everything out. If you have any comments or questions about this show or ideas of things we should talk about, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we ought to be talking about. You're listening to the show on your smartphone, probably, but you can use any of the modern podcast distribution apps like Spotify, Apple, Google, et cetera, et cetera. Please ask your friends to listen to this podcast on their smartphone devices. It can be your climate action for the week. We want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector by giving everyone an e-bike over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that respects environmental justice communities. So, Alex, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us. I hope you can come back and update us when you have more data, because it sounds like it's very interesting.
I will. Thank you for inviting us. Happy to be here and representing MassBike. And we'll continue the conversation some other time.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.